Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another edition of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston. Follow me on Twitter, Facebook, and the Gram. And don't forget to subscribe to us on the YouTube. That's at Left of Lansing. And please subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast. Now, we are entering the final weekend of September, and I have to tell you, it is quite surreal to watch these Detroit Tigers playing meaningful and exciting baseball here this time of the year. It is unreal. And also, as we're about to enter the month of October, that means we have to get ready for some surreal, crazy stuff to happen like this.
If I were the president, I would inform the threatening country, in this case Iran, that if you do anything to harm this person, we are going to blow your largest cities and the country itself to smithereens. We're going to blow it to smithereens. You can't do that. And there would be no more threats. There would be no more threats.
Just play that clip for the many people out there who try to claim that Trump is really an anti-war kind of a guy. I mean, he's anything but. And you know the sad part is that some leftists out there really believe that. I mean, we know MAGA believes it because they don't reside in the real world. But there are leftists out there who not only believe it, but also push that message to their followers. And that's why I never really classified myself as a leftist, because if they turn one more degree to the left, then they suddenly find themselves in MAGA land. I mean, that's how far left they are. Sometimes the far left and the far right will come together. The other day, I came across a show in which the hosts were supposedly from the left, and all they did, though, was criticized Kamala Harris and the Democrats endlessly to the point that it was like there was zero threat from a right-wing Christian nationalist MAGA Republican Party led by dear leader Trump. I mean, look, I am a progressive, and being a progressive means that we not only see reality by fighting for working class Americans, but it means we are not blind to the facts. So there are times that we are not afraid to call out Democrats or the Democratic Party when we think they're in the wrong. If you've listened to this show, you've heard me complain and criticize state and national Democrats where I think that they're making some wrong decisions and some wrong moves. I've even criticized Governor Gretchen Whitmer when I think that she did wrong, like when she joined the indicted Lee Chatfield and then also his clownish friend, the misogynist Mike Shirky, in passing that disastrous auto insurance reform bill a few years ago, a bill that we're still hoping Democrats in the majority in Lansing will fix. Look, being critical of our side is what separates us from MAGA. We're not in a cult. We know people aren't perfect, and especially politicians and corporate giants. So we are going to call them out when we think that they are doing wrong. We stick by our principles. That being said, we are not going to do what some leftists believe in, which is burning the village in order to save it mantra that they always spew. And then, if that happens, all we're left with is MAGA in charge, with the rest of us living in their Handmaid's Tale version of America. We don't want that. You have to sometimes think strategically. So it's okay to expect more and to keep pushing for Democrats to adopt a common sense, populist, progressive agenda. And you'll hear me speak honestly and frankly about Michigan Democrats in my last call segment this week, as Democratic Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib was the victim of a gross smear. And worse yet, some other Michigan Democrats jumped aboard the smear propagated by the corporate media. That's coming up in the last call in just a few minutes. But while we push Democrats to do better for the people, we progressives can also simultaneously ensure that we blunt MAGA from tearing up our Constitution and destroying our democratic institutions. We can also stop them from passing their hateful Project 2025 agenda, an agenda that's been decades in the making, but it is an agenda that MAGA believes will pass if they can get their dear leader back in the White House, and we can't allow that. I mean, that could mean dire consequences for we Michiganders. For example, we've had some major celebrations and some major victories here in the state in the name of working people, like when the Democratic majority reversed the anti-worker and anti-family MAGA right to work for less law, or when Michigan Democrats reinstated the prevailing wage law to help workers earn a living wage, which helps the overall economy. I know, stupid thinking there, right? But those victories for Michigan workers could vanish if dear leader wins the White House, Republicans win the House and the Senate, if dear leader is able to add another MAGA right-winger to the Supreme Court, and if MAGA Republicans retake the state house here in Michigan. First, if they retake the state house, they'll block everything that Whitmer and the Democrats want to pass to help workers, families, schools, teachers, the environment, and the state's growing clean energy industry and more. Second, if dear leader Trump wins the White House, he will then enact major portions of Project 2025 that wants to destroy unions and collective bargaining. For example, Project 2025 calls for the changing of overtime rules, which would strip workers of their hard-earned money while finding loopholes to erase the time and a half workers earned. And it would also call for the reversal of a Biden executive order that raised the salary threshold for overtime pay to over $58,000. That expansion helped protect the pay of over 4 million hardworking Americans. Project 2025 also weakens OSHA standards and pretty much exempts small businesses from following safety standards. Oh, that should really work well for everybody, don't you think? And despite the right-wing MAGA Supreme Court majority gutting public service unions by making them basically right to work for less, Project 2025 isn't stopping there. No, it's calling for the elimination of public service unions altogether. Oh, wouldn't that just be grand? So this is what we will get if dear leader gets back into power, and there's not much that we'll be able to do about it here in Michigan to enact our own labor laws if Republicans gain control of the state house. The same goes for the state Supreme Court, which, hey, we just watched them recently rule in favor of the working class here in Michigan by ruling that Republicans from years ago acted unconstitutionally when they watered down minimum wage and earned paid sick leave laws. And that's why we have to keep the court majority out of the hands of a regressive judicial activist MAGA right-wing majority. That's why we have to vote for Kira Harris-Bolden and Kimberly Thomas, because if we don't, we could end up with a state Supreme Court majority by people like this U.S. District Judge in North Dakota. According to Raw Story, a North Dakota judge on Monday granted a request by the Catholic Diocese of Bismarck and the Catholic Employers Association to temporarily block the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission from enforcing part of its anti-discrimination regulations related to abortion, fertility treatment, and LGBTQ workers. U.S. District Judge Daniel Traynor said in his ruling, "Time and again, the First Amendment rights of American citizens has been the subject of litigation in federal court. Organizations must continually sue to keep the federal government from infringing on basic and well-settled rights to freedom of religion." And as Raw Story reports, the case challenges provisions in two documents recently published by the EEOC, a rule implementing the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, an act signed into law by President Joe Biden in 2022 that requires employers to provide certain workplace accommodations for pregnant and postpartum mothers. Oh, now isn't that terrific? It's such a pro-life party, right? That says, the hell with pregnant mothers and postpartum mothers. The hell with them. We don't care about them one bit. Now, I understand this is a U.S. District Court decision in the state of North Dakota, but if MAGA gains control of our state Supreme Court, expect similar decisions such as this one. And please let this serve as another reminder of how against IVF treatment MAGA really is and will always be, and how against women's reproductive rights MAGA is and will always be. Why? Because women have some control over their reproductive freedoms and bodily autonomy when it comes to IVF, let's say. I mean, that's bad, according to the white Christian nationalists out there. So please, keep this in mind when voting for Kira Harris-Bolden and Kimberly Thomas for the state Supreme Court this November, or earlier if you're about to get your absentee ballots. But these are the forces that we're up against here this November. There's one side, the progressive side, the sane side, the patriotic side, the freedom-loving side, and then there's the MAGA side, which is dominated by a cult of personality, dominated by a guy who never gave a damn about anyone but himself. I ran across this video the other day from the right-wing rag called Newsmax, in which they talked with voters from Indiana County, Pennsylvania, where Dear Leader Trump held a rally recently. And let me just play this clip for you, okay? Listen.
What's the most important issue for you as a Pennsylvania voter?
The illegal immigration into this country.
How is it hurting you and folks you know?
It's not. It's just the principle of the fact that they, you know, everybody comes in here and gets free stuff and taking stuff away from hardworking Americans, and we got to put America first again.
Let me first just say how sad it makes me to hear this kind of audio, because a lot of my family is from that area in Pennsylvania. My parents grew up there, so that means my grandparents lived there as well, as did so many other friends and family. And even hearing that guy's Western Pennsylvania accent makes me even sadder, because I can't understand how these people follow and celebrate a guy who wouldn't want them stepping one foot on his golf courses or his precious Mar-a-Lago. But the part I can't really wrap my brain around really is how that voter said he is backing Dear Leader Trump because of his immigration stance. And when the Newsmax guy there asked the voter, how is illegal immigration affecting him? The guy said, oh, it's not. Then he said, it's the principle of the whole thing, how immigrants are just taking free stuff away from good old America First people. I mean, that's sad, because the guy backs someone who hired migrant workers on his property. And also the guy that he backs wants to give corporations that welcome migrant workers a massive corporate tax break. It's sad, because he's voting for something that doesn't affect him, while he votes for something that could harm other people just trying to make a better life for themselves here. Livingston County progressive activist and friend of the podcast, Casey Helton, was challenged recently by a MAGA dude bro on Twitter who asked her, and I'm quoting here, serious question. How many illegal criminal aliens is enough? How many people should be allowed to walk across the border or flown into a town near you? Do you understand what laws are for and what is needed to maintain a country? How many McDonald's and fruit-picking jobs are there for people that can't speak our language, have nowhere to live, can't drive legally, and have no money? How many? And then Casey responded in the awesome way that she only can. Serious question. How many Americans eat vegetables at McDonald's, really? I mean, really? I mean, she's right there. All of these MAGA cultists proclaim that they want to send all the immigrants, aka brown and black people, back to where they came from while they enjoy the fruits of their labor, working in farm fields, cleaning hotel rooms, and working at places these people would never dream of working. And then I added my two cents by tweeting, if MAGA were truly sincere in protecting the border, they'd support heavy fines for those employers hiring migrant workers. But they won't. Ah. And then once food costs start rising, since companies can no longer exploit migrant workers, these same people will once again blame immigrants. I mean, look, I could be wrong, but I don't see many of these MAGA folks out there in the farm fields picking fruits and veggies. I just don't. Now, this whole discussion started because Casey highlighted how the MAGA Livingston County Board of Commissioners just passed a resolution saying the county sheriff's office will begin documenting its interactions with undocumented immigrants, regardless of the nature of the contact. As the Livingston Post reports about this resolution, it says, whereas citizens continue to express concerns about illegal immigration and its associated increase in crime, and whereas ignoring these concerns, Border Czar Kamala Harris has permitted millions of illegal immigrants to cross our borders, and whereas, though largely denied and underreported by major media organizations, these illegal immigrants have contributed to an increase in crime. As the story notes, I mean, that is all a lie. I mean, it is. It's a lie to say that immigrants are causing higher numbers of crime. As the story notes, an investigation from the Marshall Project found no link between undocumented immigration and increased crime, while a study published by Oxford Economic Papers found that undocumented immigrants were 33% less likely to be institutionalized than U.S. natives. Huh. Interesting. And then last spring, Michigan Advance had a story showing the positive impacts that immigrants have here in the state of Michigan alone. It said in the story, and I quote, in terms of putting money into Michigan's economy, immigrants made up nearly 9% of the state's spending power in 2022, totaling a collective $23.1 billion. The new Michiganders also can help with gaps in the labor force. According to the report, immigrants make up 8.4% of the employed labor force, which exceeds their share of the population. The report estimates that immigrants are 24% more likely to be of working age than their U.S.-born counterparts, indicating the population influx can help address shortages in labor across industries. I mean, we're always talking about a labor shortage or how Michigan is suffering from a brain drain or population drain. Well, this is one way to fix it. But don't worry, you've got some real brilliant minds there in Livingston County saying, no, 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 let's make their lives tougher. Let's hopefully drive them out. My God, I mean, really, this is what we're dealing with. But this is who the MAGA cult want their dear leader Trump to throw out of this country. Why? Because he plays on their irrational fears and he plays on some of his supporters' worst racist fears. Oh, and of course, Livingston County MAGA Sheriff Mike Murphy is all about this resolution to rough up immigrants in this county. I'm sorry, to document interactions with immigrants. This is the same Sheriff Mike Murphy that I talked about with Michigan Advance's John King a few weeks ago, as Murphy used the police office there to hold a Dear Leader campaign event. And since then, Sheriff Murphy's got himself in a little bit of hot water for allowing his office to be used for a campaign stunt. And he's also in hot water because that little stunt ended up costing Livingston County taxpayers some $40,000. A mighty fine day's work there indeed, Sheriff Murphy. These guys have nothing to offer to enrich and improve the lives of their fellow neighbors or of anybody here in the state. And that's the complete opposite of what Michigan Democrats have done here in the state with their majority. For instance, Democratic State House Representative and friend of the show, Ranjiv Puri, celebrated the fact that Governor Whitmer signed his bill into law, granting homeowners the right to put solar panels and EV chargers on their property. Here's what Representative Puri posted on Twitter, and I quote, "A homeowners association would not be able to prevent the ability of a homeowner to make energy-saving modifications and improvements on their home. This would mean no more all-out prohibitions on things such as rooftop solar panels or EV chargers, amongst other energy-saving improvements. I have heard from so many constituents from not only House District 24, but all over Michigan on this issue. Michiganders are eager to make energy-saving modifications to their home. These investments can come with a host of benefits for homeowners, such as reduced energy costs, increased property value, environmental sustainability, and energy independence." Congratulations, Representative Puri, on getting your bill passed. You see, that's deregulating for the people and allowing people the freedom to enrich their lives, their pocketbooks, and hey, for the environment, for the common good. That's what helping people looks like. That's what freedom looks like. Okay, now let's move on and let's talk about education. This week, Michigan Senate Democrats voted out a supplemental budget that provides $125 million to schools for mental health and school safety. Now, that is less than the $300 million that schools received in last year's school budget, thanks in part to COVID relief money. But Democrats are trying to find ways to provide some extra funding for mental health, which is desperately needed in schools. And on the Senate side, 15 Republicans, including my senator, Roger, Mr. Excitement Hawk, voted against the measure, meaning it won't go into immediate effect, which means instead of schools getting the money this year, school districts will now have to wait until wintertime. I mean, explain that to me, Republicans. How's that being pro-life about the kids and the families? I mean, really, that's beyond me. But MAGA Republicans will still end up blaming Democrats one way or another. But that's what this election is all about. Democracy versus MAGA cult, school lunches versus school vouchers, as last week's guest Josh Cowan talked about, and serious governing for the people versus a warped and weird Christian nationalist viewpoint that only harms the future of the country. Not that any of that matters. I sort of sound like Jason Robards from All the President's Men, where he played Washington Post editor, what was his name? Ben Bradley, right? And he tells Woodward and Bernstein at the end of the movie that all that's riding on their reporting of Watergate is the First Amendment of the Constitution, freedom of the press, and maybe the future of the country. Not that any of that matters. But everyone, if we screw this up, I'm going to get mad. You're listening to LOL.
I have concepts of a plan.
A podcast that believes in using common sense to move Michigan into the future. And by common sense, we mean progressive sense. We've all seen what 40 years of Republican leadership did to this state, and we refuse to go back. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. You can follow Pat on Facebook or X. Pat still calls it Twitter. Or on the Gram, Threads, and also on YouTube. Subscribe to the show on YouTube and wherever else you listen to your podcasts. All right, I think we gave Pat enough time to catch his breath. Let's get back to it. Here's Pat Johnston.
I'd like to say a quick thank you to Jessica for being the voice and adding a voice of gravitas to Michigan's premier progressive podcast. Thanks so much for all of your hard work, my dear friend. Okay, time now for a Left of Lansing last call. I have to give my take on the vicious smear attacks that happened on Michigan Democratic Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib this past week. Now, the attacks on Tlaib were not based in fact, and they were based on lies. And everyone involved owes a public and heartfelt apology to Rashida Tlaib. Now, Tlaib has had a lot of light on her due to the fact that she's the only Palestinian American in Congress. So whenever she criticizes the right-wing Netanyahu government's mass killings of thousands and thousands of Palestinians in Gaza, she gets attacked, naturally, not just by right-wing Christian nationalist MAGA Republicans, no, but also by many in her own party. Tlaib is at times a woman without a party because of how many Democrats, including some here in her state, are faster than MAGA Republicans at attacking her whenever she has the temerity to say one critical word about Israel. Case in point, her criticisms of Michigan Democratic Attorney General Dana Nessel after Nessel's office filed charges against 11 pro-Palestine protesters at the University of Michigan earlier this month. Now, as the Detroit Metro Times' Steve Neeling reported at the time, Nessel charged 11 people, most of whom were either student or alumni, after they refused to leave a campus protest encampment once police cleared the scene back in May of this year. Now, the story did note that two other U of M alums were charged for their counter-protesting back in April as they allegedly destroyed some personal property of the protesters and also for attempted ethnic intimidation. So I just wanted to make sure that was out there too, as I want everyone knowing all the facts. Now, according to the Detroit Metro Times story, the university decided to ask police to come in and clear the encampment after several talks between protesters and university officials last spring. And so on the early morning of May 21st, police cleared the area on campus, and Nessel's office would later release a statement saying that police received resistance from protesters. Some threw objects at police and others tried to obstruct them. Not all the protesters, of course, but some of them. Now, protesters, meanwhile, accused the police of using excessive force and ratcheting up the situation. Anyway, Attorney General Nessel would go on to say, and I'm quoting here, "There were dozens of demonstrators in this encampment that morning who promptly obeyed the officers on the scene and dispersed. For those who did not, trespassing is a 30-day misdemeanor. In this case, we charged only those who made an effort to impede the officers clearing the encampment. Resisting or obstructing is a much more serious offense, and for the seven demonstrators we have charged with that felony, we allege that every one of them physically placed their hands or bodies against police who were conducting their duty to clear the hazardous encampment or physically obstructed an arrest." Nessel emphasized that while the right to free speech and assembly is protected under the First Amendment, illegal activities will not be tolerated. Okay, so she would then conclude by saying, "Conviction in your beliefs is not an excuse to break the law." Now, it should be noted that on the local level, Washtenaw County Prosecutor Eli Savitt brought charges against four people for allegedly resisting, obstructing, and assaulting police during a protest last November, but no other charges have been filed on the county level ever since. So the local county prosecutor is not going after these protesters as hard as Dana Nessel is doing. Okay, after Nessel announced the charges a couple of weeks ago, Congresswoman Tlaib took to Twitter and posted the following, so I'm quoting here. "The AG failed to deliver justice for the victims of the Flint water crisis, but has time to bring frivolous charges that only serve to silence those speaking out against a genocidal apartheid regime? This shameful attack on students' rights will fail. Follow the Constitution." Now look, we can have a discussion and debate on the failure to bring those responsible for the Flint water crisis to justice. Justice for the thousands and thousands of people and the children who are wronged in that crisis. And maybe you don't blame Dana Nessel for that failure. Maybe it also pointed to a systemic failure of how difficult it is to hold powerful people accountable for their actions. Or maybe you do blame Nessel's office altogether. But Rashida Tlaib was simply pointing out how the rich and powerful keep walking between the raindrops, while those without that kind of privilege do not. And you should have read the responses to her tweet. I mean, wow. It was sad to read such hate-filled responses, many of which from pro-Netanyahu people who just love the idea of the United States paying for Israel's weapons of war of destruction. Now, this whole episode took a different turn this week or so when Rashida Tlaib spoke with the aforementioned Steve Kneeling of the Detroit Metro Times. In an interview with the Times, Tlaib described the U of M protest as inclusive, diverse, and very loving. She also wished University President Santa Ono would have seen the protest and see his students as people simply wanting to save lives. I'm going to read verbatim how the story reads for the next paragraph or two, okay? So I just want to give you the context. So here it is. Steve Kneeling writes, Tlaib also criticized Nessel for what she believes is a biased approach to the protest. We've had the right to dissent, the right to protest, Tlaib says. We've done it for climate, the immigrant rights movement, for Black lives, and even around issues of injustice among water shutoffs. But it seems that the Attorney General decided if the issue was Palestine, she was going to treat it differently. And that alone speaks volumes about the possible biases within the agency she runs. Now, reporter Steve Kneeling then writes, Nessel is the first Jewish person to be elected Attorney General of Michigan. Now, it's that part of the story the national press ran with to direct all kinds of hate towards Rashida Tlaib. But before I get into that, let me just go down a few more paragraphs where Tlaib is quoted saying in the story, and I quote, I think people at the University of Michigan put pressure on her to do this, and she fell for it, Tlaib says. I think President Ono and the Board of Regent members were very much heavy-handed in this. It had to come from somewhere. And Steve Kneeling then writes, the congresswoman lamented the long-term impact of the university's actions. In 10 years, the University of Michigan itself is going to teach about this movement and say how wonderful it was, or how it moved our country toward a direction that it needed to following international law and human rights laws and our own U.S. laws, Tlaib says. Yet people are going to write about how the University of Michigan decided to prosecute, criminalize, and vilify their students when they just did everything that they were taught to do. So here's my question. In everything I just read to you, what did Rashida Tlaib say that was so outrageous and so anti-Semitic? I just read her quotes to you along with the corresponding paragraphs or the sentences by Steve Kneeling. Where did Rashida Tlaib cross the line? I mean, hey, look, you can disagree with her criticisms and you can talk about it, fine. But how in the world did she supposedly say anything anti-Semitic? I ask that question because that's how the national corporate media ran with the story. For example, CNN's Dana Bash tweeted last Sunday, and I quote, a sad reality, anti-Semitism is everywhere and it comes from both ends of the political spectrum. We saw two examples of politicians sidestepping instead of calling it out on CNN's State of the Union. So Bash was referring to an interview that Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer gave on CNN last weekend in which Bash's own co-worker, Jake Tapper, confronted the governor for not having anything to say about Rashida Tlaib claiming that Nessel only filed the charges because she's Jewish and that the protesters were not. Of course, that's not at all what the story said, but that's how CNN's Jake Tapper grossly characterized the story. Now, Whitmer took a, on the one hand, this and on the other hand approach, but in all seriousness, in her response, it's obvious that Whitmer didn't want to get caught not showing empathy to either her Jewish American or Arab American voters. And Whitmer also said in the interview that she was not getting in the middle of Dana Nessel and Rashida Tlaib's fight. Sadly, Whitmer later released a statement saying it's anti-Semitic to say Dana Nessel only filed those charges against the protesters because she's Jewish. Again, that saddened me a bit since I thought Whitmer's original answer was good enough and All she and her people had to do was just read the Detroit Metro Times story. That's all they had to do. Because in response to Dana Bash's tweet, the story's author, Steve Neeling, of the Detroit Metro Times, responded to her by saying what Dana Bash was tweeting was a lie and that Tlaib never claimed to say what CNN says she was saying. You heard the story. I read it for you. And I'll put a link to that story, along with other Steve Neeling's follow-up fact checks on the lie being pushed by CNN and others. Unfortunately, though, Dana Nessel picked up the lie and ran with it, tweeting, Rashida's religion should not be used in a cartoon to imply that she's a terrorist. It's Islamophobic and wrong, just as Rashida should not use my religion to imply I cannot perform my job fairly as Attorney General. It's anti-Semitic and it's wrong. Now, Dana Nessel was referring to a sickening cartoon by a Detroit News auto critic depicting Tlaib sitting at her desk with a blown-up beeper beside her, thinking aloud, and, you know, you had the little thought cloud above her, and it said, odd, my pager just exploded. It was in reference to the Israeli attack that exploded pagers in Lebanon aimed at getting Hezbollah members. The cartoon suggested that Rashida Tlaib is part of a terror organization and not a member of Congress. It was despicable. It was gross. It was downright racist. Now, the cartoon appeared in the right-wing rag called National Review and was not part of the Detroit News. Still, not a good look for the Detroit News, which distanced itself from the cartoon. Okay, now back to Dana Nessel. Look, bottom line, though, she got caught. Just as Dana Bash did, just as Jake Tapper did, just as the Anti-Defamation League CEO Jonathan Greenblatt did, who has since tweeted a tepid retraction to his earlier criticisms of Tlaib, and Detroit News columnist Ingrid Jacques is even caught. I mean, she just wrote a column for the USA Today calling on Whitmer to condemn Rashida Tlaib even more, despite the fact Ingrid failed to accurately report that Rashida Tlaib did not say what Ingrid says Rashida Tlaib says. I mean, this is so maddening and so ridiculous. And it's just a way for those in the corporate press and for those who are in love with Netanyahu and his war atrocities and who can't wait until he sucks this country into an all-out war in the Middle East. It's just a way for everyone to pile on and pile on and pile on some more on the only Palestinian American in Congress. This lunatic in Israel is sucking this country into a fight in a region in which there's no winnable strategy. And this lunatic is doing all of this to avoid losing an election in his own country and then going to jail. And you know what? He wants war for another reason. It's to get Donald Trump in office because Bibi truly believes that an upheaval in the Middle East is good for Donald Trump. And since Trump takes loads and loads and loads of cash from the Adelson family, he will let Netanyahu and his extreme right-wing band of lunatics do whatever they want to do in Gaza and everywhere else. But politicians in this country, both on the Republican side and Democratic side, say, hey, Bibi, whatever you want, we'll give it to you. This is a systemic problem within our political system, and it's got to stop. We've got to stop giving money to Israel when it doesn't advance the cause of peace and when it's hurting this country's well-being. And we've got to stop calling anyone who opposes the right-wing zealot Netanyahu and his destructive war in Gaza as being anti-Semites. And we've definitely got to stop using blatant Islamophobia, and we have to call out Islamophobia more and more. I mean, it's sad because there is true anti-Semitism happening every single day, especially on Dear Leader Trump's side. I mean, hell, Dear Leader even dined with a white supremacist at his home in Florida. This has got to stop. The smearing of Rashida Tlaib happened because of something deeper and more sinister. Again, as Steve Neeling from the Detroit Metro Times wrote in his fact-checking piece, Tlaib never once mentioned Nessel's religion or Judaism, but Metro Times pointed out in a story that Nessel is Jewish, and that appears to be the spark that led to the false claims. It should also be noted that the ACLU of Michigan criticized Nessel for charging peaceful protesters at the University of Michigan. So is the ACLU of Michigan also anti-Semitic? Many people owe Rashida Tlaib an apology, especially those from her own party. Which leads me to my final point. Cenk Uygur from the progressive show called The Young Turks reported on this story this week and then declared that Dana Nessel should be defeated in the next primary. Well, I'm not going there. I'm not. First of all, Nestle's in her second term as being the state's AG, so she can't run again, so it doesn't matter. Second, she's been a good attorney general for the state. She's been really good and is doing everything she can to facilitate, for instance, a shutdown of the Line 5 oil pipeline. And she's defending consumers by fighting against a proposed rate increase by DTE Energy and Consumers Energy, who, according to a new independent audit, has worse than average service interruptions, restoration delays, and tree trimming cycles compared to other utility companies. So Dana Nestle's been fighting on behalf of those who don't have a voice here in Michigan. Oh, and she's also been going after corruption within the MAGA Michigan Republican Party, too. Let's not forget that. Which is why I'm really hoping. I think this would be good for everybody. But I'm hoping that she and Rashida Tlaib have a meeting here real soon and hash this all out. I think it would be good for all of us on the side of democracy and freedom. Because, let's be honest, Dana Nestle and Rashida Tlaib probably agree on 95% of the issues. I mean, they both fight for social justice, gay rights, women's rights, worker rights, environmental justice, economic justice, and more and more and more. I mean, they have both suffered countless misogynistic attacks by the right wing. I mean, they are on the same side, and they both fight for all the people. But I also hope that this is a learning moment for all of those who attacked Rashida Tlaib. Make sure the corporate press is giving you all the facts, all of the facts, before attacking and smearing someone. Actually, maybe that's a lesson for all of us.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Thanks so much for your support and thanks for listening. Please let me know what you think of the podcast. And if you have guest ideas or stories you think I should focus on, just email me. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Remember, there's nothing wrong taking a night off to recharge the mind, to recharge the batteries. For me, it's watching a little football on the weekends or chilling on the patio and listening to some awesome 90s music or just watching a show. For instance, we're currently watching Veep since we didn't watch it during its original run. And let me just say this, if you don't mind, Julia Louis-Dreyfus is an American treasure for sure. And maybe some of you will take a little break and watch the Lions on Monday Night Football. But after a little recharging, after a little R&R, we all have to get back into the real game. Because after this weekend, we've got about 5 weeks until Election Day. So the countdown is on. Oh, and coming up this Tuesday is the vice presidential debate, which I'm sure I will have lots to talk about. Until then, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.